You are about to enter a world beyond your five senses. A world where doubt and certainty walk hand in hand. A world where strangeness is king and mystery is his bastard child. You are about to enter Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world. When people talk of magic, we laugh
nervously.
I am Lionel Nimrod. In 1974, I played the magic mad court wizard Merlin in Spolansky's classic 15-hour epic Lancelot and Guinevere. Spolansky insisted that as research, he and I should join a coven of teenage witch girls with an unusual initiation ceremony, which I believe left my life cursed. Over the next 10 years, what little work I got was poorly received. I experienced my well-publicized problems. And a legal action by one of the witch girl's parents meant neither Spolansky nor I may ever risk returning to Wales. So what is this strange force named magic? Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world of magic! From the shuttle to amazement.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And you are?
I'm Richard Herring, Stuart.
Hello and welcome to Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World, coming to you live this week from Lancaster University. And this week, magic. Is it real? Did witches really fly with broomsticks between their legs? Or did they just get a bit overexcited? If voodoo curses really work, then why, after I've spent over £6.30 on wax, offal and knitting needles, is my ex-girlfriend's mother not only still alive, but healthier than ever?
Do magic marker pens possess mystical powers? Or does it only seem like it if you spend an afternoon in the multi-story car park sniffing them?
Is all magic evil? And does that make the wand-waving glove puppet Sooty a demon from hell? Controlled by Satan? Or is he just a piece of orange rag controlled by Matthew Corbett?
And we've chosen Lancaster University's Nuffield Theatre as the venue for a show on magic because, in occult circles, it's considered to be one of the world's most magical buildings.
That's right. Now, the Nuffield Theatre might look to you like a typical 1970s concrete and brick design nightmare, where the brown stone walls and brown stage are gently offset by the brown seating platform. But this theatre was in fact built in the 13th century in the perfect shape to act as a duct for magical energy.
And the magic nature of the university is borne out by the annual huge harvest of magic mushrooms on the campus. Which is as good a reason as any for putting it near the top of your Ucker form.
And later on, we'll be harnessing the power of the Nuffield Theatre with a genuine magic spell from the 16th century book, The Secret Law of Magic, to attempt to conjure up a devil to do our bidding. So, if you've any moral scruples, I think it's best that you leave now. But be prepared to be cruelly taunted by us and all your mates on the way out.
We're also going to attempt a more conventional piece of conjuring. So, will you please welcome Britain's most famous magical assistant, wife of magician Paul Daniels, it's TV's Debbie McGee!
Hello!
Now, Debbie, before we start, there's something about you that's always puzzled me a little. Now, if you don't mind me saying, you're a very attractive young woman.
Thank you, Richard, but I'm not really. Not a lot.
Yes, you are. A lot. I was wondering why it is that you, Debbie, have married the tiny, shrieking, bug-eyed, bald dwarf, Paul Daniels.
Because I love him, Richard, that's why.
Oh, to be honest, I hadn't really considered that as a possibility.
Anyway, Debbie, we wondered if you'd like to help us out on the Inexplicable World tonight by climbing into this sealed metal box here, and we'll see if over the course of the programme, the magical energy contained in the Nuffield Theatre can transport you into this sealed metal box here.
I'd love to. Sealed metal boxes are like a second home to me.
Right, in you get.
Thanks, Debbie. See you later. I'll be looking forward to that.
As children, we spend an awful lot of time working out what three wishes we would have if we got the choice.
Yes, at the age of 8, I wrote down what my three wishes would be. One, to have my whole house converted into a scale-electric racetrack. Two, to have a whole bar of chocolate just for myself. And three, to have the blonde one from ABBA appear in my bedroom in just her pants. Just for fun, I've worked out what my three wishes would be today at the age of 25. And oddly enough, they were exactly the same.
As a child, I had a bit more of a social conscience, and so I worked out that I would wish for one, an end to all wars, two, a cure for all diseases, and three, that the blonde one from ABBA appear in my bedroom wearing only her pants and carrying notebooks on a detailed solution to all world food shortages. But earlier this week, I went out to meet someone whose wishes have all come true, literally. I'm here in a giant palace made entirely out of 24-karat gold and floating in a diamond-studded cloud kingdom high above the streets of Peckham in London for an audience with the world's richest man and self-proclaimed king of the universe, Ian Dealey. Yet 3 years ago, Ian was an unemployed fridge door fitter and lived in a dingy bedsit. How did this amazing transformation come about?
Well, Stuart, I found some old Green Shield tokens and I took them down to Argos. Oh, I wish I had a cup of tea. Good. And anyway, all they had left was this dirty old lamp. But waste not, want not, so I give it a bit of a rub, and poof, Genie appears out the plug socket. And what was it you said, Genie?
I said, I am the Genie of the Lamp, Master. What are your three wishes?
Yes! Hey! Well, I'm not an idiot, am I? It's obvious. If you're given three wishes, you're immediately going to wish for a million wishes, aren't you?
Didn't the genie see this coming?
Well, with hindsight, it seems like an obvious flaw in the whole three wishes. It's never occurred to anyone else.
It is a big responsibility, going from having nothing to having everything you ever wanted, ever. But I don't abuse it.
Master Ian, the blonde one from ABBA is waiting in your room in just her pants.
Ah, yes, yes, thanks. Jean, I wish that Kenneth Branagh be joined at the hip to Les Dennis. And that Les, in turn, be joined by the eye to one of the smaller Shetland Isles. Hey, I love Les, he's great. But it's not all fun, you know. Every day I get hundreds of letters saying, my little son Brian is very ill. His only wish is to be able to visit Dudley Zoo before the end. And I say, well, I wish I could help Brian, and I could, but I'm not going to. Sometimes I wish that everyone who writes begging letters to me would just drop dead. And of course they do, which cheers me up no end, as you can imagine. Jean, have you finished cleaning the bogs yet?
No, Master, I was removing all mention of Spain and its people from all recorded history, as you wish.
Get on with it, or I'll wish those spikes were going into your back again.
Sorry, Master, yes, Master.
Hey, she loves it. She loves being treated like that. What you've got to understand is that where she comes from, the East, it's a different culture, isn't it, right?
Sure, yeah. It's so easy, though. It can't make you happy.
No, it does. It's great. I've got the lot, Stu. I wish for immortality. I can have any bird I want. I've had a rather special extension done, if you know what I mean. And Jeannie is my lifelong slave for all eternity. I'm laughing. I mean, I'm not an idiot, Stuart. Marley likes to say, oh, I wish that Genie was free from my power and all the wishes I've ever made were void, am I? Oh, bum.
Lonely, bleak and mysterious. Stonehenge is one of the most powerfully magical places in the British Isles. But today, all that remains of whatever ceremonial activities might have taken place there is the annual Wiltshire Constabulary tradition of beating up anyone in the area who lives in a bus. Even 100 years ago, the inventions we have today would be seen as magic.
A mysterious white box on the wall of a public lavatory that sends the wind to make wet hands marginally less wet.
Or a strange machine that can turn bread into toast.
Or a horseless chariot with a sticker in the back window saying, honk if you've had it today. But does magic exist in modern-day Britain? Wendy Leafley went to York to find out.
That old black magic's got me.
Hello, Richard and Stuart. I'm at Bootham Crescent, the home of York City Football Club.
From outside, it appears like the stadium of any team in the lower divisions of the Football League, but according to local resident David Marlborough, pure evil lurks beneath the floodlights. But David believes that York City are magic.
York City are magic, yes. The football team is just a front for what is the largest coven of witches and wizards in Britain today. The team is building up a store of magic evil energy which it plans to unleash on the unsuspecting world. It is my divine mission to warn the people of York. That's why I've been writing York City and magic everywhere I can. On walls, in toilets, in Tippex, on children's sports bags, on my own hand in black marker, look.
York City manager John Ward what he thought of Marlborough's claims.
Well, of course, it's ridiculous, Wendy. York City is not a front for some sort of magic evil war or coven from beyond hell. We use our magic only for good purpose. That much is true, yes. To play for York City, a player has to be magic in some way. All our apprentices are capable of at least self-working card tricks, and by the end of their playing career, we hope they'll become as accomplished as Paul Barnes, who can channel magic from Mother Earth through his fingertips to create bolts of laser-style energy to use as he will. But only for good, of course. Perhaps to help dig a child out of a well, or to perform delicate eye surgery. We're not evil.
York City will tell you that they are white witches, but they have displeased the Lord with their wickedness. In the 1983-4 season, York won the fourth division with record points. Barely 3 months after the success, the Lord showed his anger by sending a bolt of lightning to destroy York Minster. Coincidence? I think not.
David Marlborough is talking out of sour grapes, Wendy. He applied for an apprenticeship here in 1986, but he wasn't even able to make a small spongy ball appear to travel from one red plastic cup to another. Now, that might be good enough for Doncaster Rovers, but not York City.
Magic abilities don't seem to have stood them in good stead. In their 70-year history, their highest league position was 15th in Division 2 in 74-5.
Well, there's no need to be rude.
Saturday, and York City are playing local rivals Rochdale.
And Dean Kiley has got the ball in the York City penalty area, and he's producing a rabbit from Ray Warburton's shorts. Beautiful play, but all the York City players are distracted, and Rochdale score! Here comes York midfielder Nigel Pepper, and my God, he's levitating over the Rochdale player's head, whilst Ian Blackstone commands the wind and rain to do his bidding. Lovely. But he's taken his eye off the ball and Rochdale score again.
On the terraces, David Marlborough tries to spread his message among the fans.
York City are magic. Are magic, are magic.
Shut up, mate. You're 2-0 down.
Ow, ow.
One of your relatives could do magic tricks, couldn't he, Stuart?
Oh, not Uncle Charlie.
Yes, Stuart. And he's here to show us tonight.
Oh, God.
Yes, will you please welcome, everyone, Uncle Charlie.
Good. Hello, Richard. Hello, Stuart. Oi, stand still a minute, Stuart. I think there's something behind your ear. Yay! Why, look, it's a two-pence piece.
Well done, Uncle Charlie.
Hey, did you see that, Stuart? There was a two-pence piece behind your ear.
But it wasn't behind my ear, Uncle Charlie. It was in your hand, crudely hidden between two of your fingers, you annoying old man. You know, if I had 2p for every time you'd done this trick on me, I'd have £8.98.
Hey, what's that behind your other ear? It's another 2 new-pence piece.
All right, £9. Listen, Uncle Charlie, you're not magic. You're not even able to do the bloody trick properly. I'll show you. Like, look. Oh, Rich, look, you've got 2p behind your ear.
Where'd that come from? My ear is enchanted.
Hey, look, Richard. Here's another one behind the other ear.
Stop it, you pathetic old man, Uncle Charlie. You've never been funny, and you never will be. You're 57 years old, Uncle Charlie, and what have you ever achieved? You couldn't even impress a small child.
I see. Well, if that's how you feel, Stuart, I'll go and leave you. Thought you loved me, Stuart.
Well, I don't. Go back to the hospital.
That was a horrible thing to do, Stuart. Most normal children would love to have Uncle Charlie for an uncle. I'm like that with my nephews and nieces, Michael, Sarah, Andrew and Emily. Hello. And they love it when I mess around and do little pretend illusions and fall over and stuff.
Do they, Rich? Then it seems odd that I should receive this letter from your oldest nephew, 8-year-old Michael. Dear Stuart, please prevent Uncle Richard from coming round and trying to make us laugh by blowing raspberries and shrieking at us. Even Cousin Emily, who is 1 year old and half French, thinks he's pathetic. Why can't he be cool and mature and give us cigarettes like you? We all love you, Stuart. You are better than Richard.
Oh. Well, let's see how Debbie McGee is getting on, locked up in the metal box. Has the magic of the Nuffield Theatre yet managed to transport her to the other box? Debbie, I'm opening your little flap. What's happened?
Not a lot, Richard. I'm very hot and it's hard to breathe in here, but I'm all right.
Good. Well, perhaps you can help us with this part of the show. In the News of the World earlier this year, Debbie, it said that your husband, Paul Daniels, claimed he could do all of Jesus' miracles better than Jesus. Now, Debbie, perhaps you could tell us, is your husband really magic?
Yes, of course he is. He's an enchanted wizard, able to perform any magic he so desires.
Perhaps so, Debbie, but not according to his previous assistant. She has remained hidden for many years in fear of what Paul Daniels may do to her. But in this exclusive interview, she agreed to talk to us at the Inexplicable World.
Cheryl.
Yes?
Was wicked Paul Daniels, self-proclaimed wizard and son of God, really magic? Please, take your time.
No. No, it wasn't. It wasn't magic at all.
That's quite a claim, Cheryl. If that's so, how did he carry out the amazing feats we've seen on television?
He did it with... with special tricks.
I see. But how? How, for instance, did wicked Paul Daniels make a rabbit appear from an empty hat?
It was a trick hat. Wicked Paul Daniels used to capture rabbits in huge traps. And then starve them until they were so thin that he was able to slip them into a tiny compartment all around the brim of his top hat. And then he would press a secret button on the side of the hat which released compressed air into the rabbit. Giving it the appearance of a healthy rabbit. And also shooting it out of the hat. After the show, he would slaughter the rabbit and eat it raw.
I see. Cheryl, how did wicked Paul Daniels appear to be able to read the minds of ordinary people who insisted they'd never met him?
But he had met them, that's the point. At night, wicked Paul Daniels used to prowl the streets of Aldgate in East London in a long black gown, kidnapping innocent passers-by and taking them to his secret wicked base in the sewers deep beneath the streets of London. There, he would implant microphones in their brains. Then wicked Paul Daniels would use his powers to bring the people to his shows. He knew which card they were thinking of because using his wicked technology, he had made them think of it.
If this is too much for you, Cheryl.
No, it's time the world knew.
Most distressing of all for you, Cheryl, could you tell us how wicked Paul Daniels made it appear that he had sawed you in half?
He made it appear like he had sawed me in half by sawing me in half with a saw. Back in the cave where he kept me enchained between performances, he told me he would not feed me for a month if I failed to smile inanely throughout my ordeal, or if I shed as much as a drop of blood.
But after the magic was over, you walked away from the box?
Oh, those were not my real legs. He gave the illusion of putting my legs back on by pressing a concealed switch which stapled false rubber legs onto my torso.
Rubber legs?
Realistic ones, admittedly. You know, made up by the same people who make the false rubber arm for Rod Hull and Emu.
Rod Hull has a false arm.
Exactly. Emu bit off his real one.
So, Debbie McGee, wife of the accused Daniels, is Cheryl's testimony true?
Paul only got me to marry him by keeping all my family hostage and sending bits of them to me if ever I complained.
I knew there was something fishy about it.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
All right, love, the trick isn't over yet. Get back down in the box.
We've already heard about the magic mushrooms here at Lancaster, but why are they called magic? I'm sure none of the assembled students will be able to tell us. Personally, I'm fiercely anti all forms of drugs, and I think ordinary mushrooms are magic enough, especially on toast with a bit of cheese.
I, on the other hand, think all drugs are really great. And magic mushrooms are magic not only because they chemically alter the user's perception of the supposed real world and access the kingdom of the imagination, but also because if you spend a Sunday afternoon picking them and a Monday lunchtime selling them to school children, you can make over 300 quid for just 2 days' work.
Funnily enough, according to Keith Thomas in Religion and the Decline of Magic, Wiedenfeld and Nicholson, 1971, at Jacobean universities, many students were interested in the conjuration of spirits, which seems to have been the equivalent of drug-taking today as the fashionable temptation for undergraduates. Keith's theory is borne out by the letters which a 17th-century student, Alan Faustus, sent home to his mum.
Dear Mum, my first term at the University of Württemberg in the early 1600s, and I'm having a great crack, sorted. Fortunately, my course, Joint Honours in Computer Studies and Race Relations, hasn't even been invented yet, so I don't have to do any work. I've met a great bloke on my course from Leeds called Neil Mephistopheles, and we're going out to rave at the weekend. My dirty pants and socks are enclosed. Love, Alan.
Dear Alan, the weather is cold now, so make sure you wear that Marks and Spencer's jumper I got you. Love, Mum.
Dear Mum, guess what? Neil Mephistopheles isn't from Leeds at all. He's from Honorius, a magical dimension from beyond time. Last night, we all went out to a big field, and then Neil conjured up spirits and made them our magic devil slaves. The 35 devils of Villamegton have enabled me to fly and defy the laws of time, space and being. Good, eh? Please send more money and all my A-level essays. I no longer wear pants and socks, but my sacred necromantic robes are enclosed, Mother, you stinking piece of scum, worm, human detritus, filth. I'm the king of the world. Love, Alan.
Dear Alan, here's a cutting from the newspaper about someone else who is at university somewhere like you are. We thought you'd be interested. Love, Mum.
Mother, the demons. My head feels like 1,000,000,000 devils are dancing in it. And they are. But it's all right. I can ask them to leave at any time, and they'll go. They said, please find and close the nun's habit covered in blood. Wash it if you dare, whore. You must die. Please, please, please help me. I love you. Love, Alan.
Dear Alan, your father and I are very unhappy about the tone of your last letter. We think you're mixing with the wrong types of people. We'll be coming to pick you up next Friday. And I tell you, if your body is just a soulless walking zombie drained of all its being, you'll feel the back of my hand.
Your mum. Well, we talked about magic, but now is the time to find out if it's real. And as promised, now we're going to try and conjure up a real demon using a genuine 16th century spell to see if we can use magical energy to do our bidding.
It's too late to leave. The doors are locked. Satan has no regard for the petty fire regulations of Lancaster University.
In his book, Stairway to Hell, Chick, 1988, Christian youth worker Rick Jones writes, one of the most dangerous of all the tools that the devil uses to trick young people into riding the fast lane down to hell is his fantasy role-playing game, Dungeons and Dragons. So over here, we've got four members of Lancaster University Dungeons and Dragons Society. We're going to play the evil lead figures and plastic dice game throughout our ceremony tonight.
Beware. Even though the Dungeons & Dragons players look like harmless Trainspotter-type Iron Maiden fans covered in bum fluff, with an innocent interest in the adolescent dice game, they are in fact channels for Satan's deadly power. Now, to help everyone access the Magic Kingdom, I wanted to distribute a few handfuls of magic mushrooms, but the BBC wouldn't allow it.
So, we're going to distribute some ordinary mushrooms, and you'll just have to use your imaginations. Rick Jones also claims that all modern music is the work of Satan, and that when Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven is played backwards, Robert Plant's line, if there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alarmed now, becomes...
I sing because I live with Satan. The Lord turns me off.
So, we'll be playing that backwards as we recite the spell. Now, Idris Shah's 16th century Secret Law of Magic, republished 1957 by Muller, details the exact conditions for conjuring up a demon. Following Shah's commands, we must spread the hall of the Nuffield with a sheet of calfskin. Mind your feet there?
Now, we were supposed to draw a pentagram on this in the blood of a virgin, but this being Lancaster University, we couldn't find one. Luckily, Rich had a nosebleed earlier on, so he is there.
I'm not a virgin, though.
And tonight, the demon we'll be attempting to call up is Asmodee, the three-headed Ram King.
Your very souls rest on a knight's head, suspended over a pit of fire, and now that has turned to Idris Shah's 16th century grimoire of magic. Let the spell commence! Izzy, Wizzy, let's get busy! Eat the mushrooms, Al, and catch them!
Hang on. Izzy, Wizzy, let's get busy. That's a sooty spell. That can't be in a 16th century magic book.
Well, it is. Look, Sooty must have used Idris Shah's book as the source of his magic.
So Sooty is evil.
Well, I don't know, but the spell hasn't worked, so maybe not.
I am Asmodee. I have come from the plains of Ziminar, across the kingdom of Gath, through Corzone and the seas of Amenemy to do your magical bidding in return for all your souls. Now, what would you have me do?
Could you transport Debbie McGee from one sealed box to another?
The one you call Debbie McGee is no more. Her soul fueled the magic that brought me here.
He's right. Debbie McGee's first box is in fact empty. Rich, see, she's in the second box.
No, Debbie McGee isn't here, Stu, but someone else is. It's our weekly Hammond organ-playing Believe It or Not man, Peter Fenn.
That's right, Richard, and it's time for my weekly Hammond organ Believe It or Not spot. Believe it or not, terrifying green witch grot bags of Emu's Pink Windmill Show is not a real witch, nor is she green. In reality, she is cabaret singer and comedienne Carol Lee Scott.
Thanks, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ music was?
That was 24 Hours from Tulsa. Haunting melody indeed.
By?
That's just one of the many hits of the successful writing partnership of Baccarat and David. Their magic. Ah, Baccarat Cadabra.
Silence, you organ-playing fool. Ah, it is good to be back from the abyss. Now I will begin a 3,000-year reign of terror on your feeble world.
So, magic is real, then?
Yes, of course it is. And now I must go. You have unleashed me on the world. See you in hell!
Oh, dear, what have you done, Rich?
Oh, sorry, Lancaster, and the world. I don't really know what to say.
Well, it's your fault, mate. You said the spell, didn't you?
You made me do it. You said you'd use your showbiz contacts to introduce me to the blonde one from ABBA.
So there you have it. Magic is real, and it's evil, and we're all damned. Goodbye.
Ah, so that's what magic is. Fascinating. But, you know, perhaps my appearance in Guinevere and Lancelot imbued me with a different sort of magic, which prompted reviewer Gillian Lennart to write, Lionel Nimrod's interpretation of Merlin as a leaping, screeching madman is shocking beyond belief. Such is my magic. Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again next time for more journeys into this, my inexplicable world.
Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, Rebecca Fronton, Armando Iannucci, with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee and produced by The Magic of Radio and Sarah Smith.